You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
We made it to a Friday. It's a meat Friday at that. And if you follow what we're cooking on the Traeger, we have beer bread, beer braised chicken tacos, and short rib chili coming up later on. Who has it better than us?
Nobody.
Nobody. Nobody. All right, welcome to the program. Coming up, we have a home now for Le'Veon Bell, the Kansas City Chiefs. When does he play and what role will he have? I have a couple of suggestions there. Astros beat the Rays. They're still down 3-2. The Braves rolled the Dodgers, and they're up 3-1. We're not sure about the Colts this weekend. Right now, there's some speculation that maybe the Colts game is up in the air. Nick Saban still wants to coach. He wants to be in the building. He wants to know what he can get away with. What are the rules, and how does he kind of push those rules? Georgia-Alabama on Saturday, the big NFL game will be the Packers and the Buccaneers. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, you're welcome to join us in a variety of ways. You can email, you can dial us up, you can tweet. We'll have a poll question, play of the day, stat of the day. We say good morning to those watching on Peacock and also listening on our 376 radio affiliates around the country. Well, they won't go away. The Astros did it again. Baseball's most controversial team stayed alive in the ALCS, beating the Rays in Game 5. Carlos Correa with a walk-off home run in the ninth to keep hope alive in Houston. And here's Dusty Baker, the Astros manager, on Correa going to the plate.
Carlos told me before he went up there, he goes, you know, walk off. And I said, go ahead on, man. And I said, Lord, please let us walk off, because if not, we got to use Framber, and then we don't have Framber tomorrow. You know, things couldn't have worked out any better at that time.
It's fitting that Correa's been the star. He's been the most outspoken and defiant Astro through all of this. And no matter how you feel about the team, you have to admit they are interesting. If you don't live in the Houston area, odds are you're probably not pulling for them, but you're going to tune in probably just to watch them lose or hope they lose. But Houston's the first team since the 04 Red Sox to force a Game 6 after falling behind 3-0, and we all know what happened in 04. But the Astros have a long way to go here. The Rays still have a great pitching staff. It won't be easy to beat them two more times. But if you're rooting for drama, you might want Houston to stick around a little bit longer. As for the National League, the Dodgers on the brink. Not pretty last night. Here's Dave Roberts on Clayton Kershaw's playoff resume.
He came out and, you know, 5 innings, 1 run. And then, what happened right there in that 6th inning. But he gave us a chance to win the baseball game. You know, we couldn't put any runs up early and get a lead and or hold a lead, you know, after the Eddie home run. But that narrative couldn't be further from the truth.
Here's Clayton Kershaw in that 6th inning, the pivotal 6th inning, when the Braves broke it wide open.
It would have been nice to get Acuna out. You know, he's pretty quick right there, and it's just kind of part of playing on turf. You know, he kind of chopped that one up, and, Freddie had 2 strikes on him and probably just went one too many pitches inside, and he hit it good, but it was on the ground, and still with 2 strikes, probably got to make a better pitch. And, yeah, it's a tough way to go for that 6th inning for sure.
So now you got to win a couple of them here. And this is a Braves team that you had the hiccup where you gave up 11 runs in the first inning the previous game. But they do have a good pitching staff, and I still liken them to a better version of the Padres. Those young hitters, they get up there and they are not overwhelmed. The stage is not too big for them right now. And as far as the Astros, they're doing what they should do. If you are a great team, prove you're a great team. And you'll still go back to the same thing I say every time I see them do something great. I say, why did you cheat? If you had this talent, you had two of the best pitchers in a long, long time in Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander. And we see what you can do. But then I always go back to the same thought I have is, you had this talent. You didn't need to cheat, did you? But you did. And that's why it's always going to stick with you. I don't want to hear, if the Astros get by the A's and the Rays and go to the World Series, I still don't want to hear from any of these Astros players. Like, how do you like us now? Or, hey, what can you say? Or how can you be critical? Okay. You know, this is what happened. And they can't erase it. Now, you can add something to your resume and you can say, hey, look at what we did. We did it legitimately. Great. Congratulations. They got to win two more games with against my Rays. But the Astros are fun to watch. I have to admit that. This program is brought to you by NBC Sports and the Breeders' Cup. It'll be November 6th and 7th. The world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 great races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020 and catch all the action live on NBC Sports. McLovin, what do you have for me today?
Okay, if you hate the Astros, like I will admit I lean into that camp, would you rather they lose in the ACLS or advance to the World Series where they could also lose, but you risk them winning? So you hate the Astros.
I think it's the ALCS, but not ACLS.
Are you ALX?
ALCS.
Okay. So run that by me again. Would I rather see
would you rather them lose to the Rays or advance to the World Series?
So lose in the ALCS or the ACLS or lose in the World Series?
No. You have them go to the World Series. Okay. You don't know if they're going to win or lose. So you have the risk factor.
You know what? I want to see them go into the World Series, but only if they were going to face the Dodgers. That's the only scenario where I would root for them to advance. And I have the Rays going to the World Series against the Dodgers, so I'm going to stay with the Rays and hope they advance. I think it's a good story. I don't know if, you know, when you think of baseball and we think of spring training and you think of Florida and you think of Arizona, it just feels like during the regular season, you know, Tampa's playing, but I don't know if anybody cares. They probably care more about the Lightning and certainly about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But this is a good team. The organization is well run. They don't spend money. They find players. There's no pulse, even in Tampa, it feels like, for the Rays. And that's a shame. And I wonder, is that a relocation project for a team that could be going to the World Series? There's no buzz with them. And that's sad because they are a good team. They've been a good team. And maybe they get a chance to win a World Series this time around. Yeah, McLovin.
Okay, another poll question. Do you blame Clayton Kershaw for the Dodgers' loss last night?
No. I mean, Dave Roberts left him in. We thought if Kershaw gave you five innings, that's it. But, you know, you just don't want to go to that bullpen too soon. I think there's always that tendency of, gosh, do I have to go there? Because once you go there, then you can't go back. And Kershaw had pitched well earlier in the postseason, had the back spasms, and I thought if he gives you five innings, which he did, he gave you five quality innings. And then you left him out there, and he had a couple of grounders. They got through, and then all of a sudden, the floodgates opened up. But I can't put all the blame on him, but it's not a coincidence that he struggles in the postseason. This is habit forming here for him. And it's strange to say, this guy's got $300 million. He pitches for the Dodgers. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But I feel sorry for him. I do. Because this is something that stays with you forever. Whether it's fair or not, whenever I bring up Clayton Kershaw and I talk about he's one of the great pitchers, I have to say he's one of the great regular season pitchers of all time. Because he's an average pitcher in the postseason. When you're 11-12 and your ERA is over 4, and if I look at that and compare those numbers to his regular season resume, it's you don't even know it's the same pitcher. If I said this pitcher pitches this way in the regular season and pitches this way in the postseason, you'd go, there's no way. But that's been the case with Clayton Kershaw. Yeah, McLovin.
But I feel like in this year's playoffs, no starter, even the great ones, who get past 5 or 6 innings. They're all pulling them. I feel like that was not on Kershaw at all last night. The Dodgers' bats just went to sleep. How do you score 15 runs and then do nothing?
But that's why I said, you know, the tomorrow's momentum is tomorrow's pitcher. Like, who's on the mound facing you? Hey, they put up 15 runs. We've seen this before where all of a sudden the next game, the bats go quiet. You know, I guess there's plenty of blame to go around. Clayton will bear some of that, and he should. Dave Roberts, should he have pulled him? I mean, we have the benefit of hindsight here. And those weren't hard hit ground, you know, they weren't sharply hit, But then you start to add, you know, one, and then there's one, and then all of a sudden all it takes is one big swing, and then you're in trouble. And that's the case. But the Braves have been a better team than the Dodgers. Dodgers have all the talent, should have all the answers, but this is a Braves team that, you know, you're catching them at the wrong time. They're good. They're not afraid. Freddie Freeman has been great. These younger players, you got a pretty good pitching staff there. And that's where it gets when a team is young and gets confident. It's like the Miami Heat. That's a young team for the most part. They started to gain confidence. They weren't afraid. Hey, we went through the Milwaukee Bucks. Hey, we'll go through the Raptors. Hey, we'll go through the Celtics. You don't have time to think about that. Those are the teams that are really dangerous. When you're a favorite, it's hard to win when you're a favorite. Because even when you do, people go, okay. Like I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. It felt like when the Dodgers win, you exhale. Like, there's no celebration. And that's really difficult to play that way when the expectation levels are so high that when you win, it's like, okay, you're supposed to win. The Braves, even the Rays, and you can say the Astros for that, you know, I guess the same direction. It's pretty amazing that there's no expectation level. There's none on the Astros, very little on the Rays, and there was very little with the Braves. And when you're able to do that and have that confidence and all of a sudden, and you love to be able to say nobody picked us, nobody believed in us. And these are teams that can all say that, except for the Dodgers. Yeah, Paul.
I know this is looking a little forward, but if the Dodgers don't advance, I think a lot of people think Dave Roberts will be fired, the manager. Do you think that could be a mistake? Because if you compare it to maybe like the 90s Braves, Bobby Cox, he only won one World Series, but he kept, I think he had 14 seasons where he won 90 plus.
Yeah.
Do you think the Dodgers management will appease the fans?
I'm not trying to appease the fans. I'm trying to make the best decision for this team. Now, I've heard both sides to this, and it's been reported on both sides, that Dave Roberts, no matter what happens, is still going to be back. And then there's also, if Doc Rivers got fired by the Clippers, then will the Dodgers, you know, be able to go into next season having flamed out and maybe not got to the World Series and still keep Dave Roberts? I don't know. By all accounts, people love Dave Roberts, the person. But managerial, you know, decisions here, I think that's where you take a really long, hard look in the offseason of what some of those moves were. And I know, you know, this is during a pandemic, and, you know, you can put this season in a vacuum, but there were still decisions that were made, previous year's decisions that were made or not made, and, you know, that might come back and haunt Dave Roberts. You got Dustin May, who's pitching, and then you got Walker Buehler. If they got to a game seven, is Clayton Kershaw going to be your guy? Maybe in a relief situation there, but, man, you've got to get some great pitching here. And then hope that, you know, you're able to. It feels like the Dodger bats keep waiting for somebody else to do it because there's so much talent in that lineup. You just go, yeah, he'll pick us up. Muncy will pick us. Seager's going to do. Bellinger. Mookie Betts didn't do anything last night. So it's not just Kershaw, but he'll be the poster child for when you think of the lack of success. If I juxtapose postseason to regular season, I don't know who comes close, who wants to come close to that. You know, Greg Maddux wasn't a great postseason pitcher. Tom Glavine wasn't a great postseason pitcher. But if I'm looking at the stark contrast of numbers of regular season to postseason, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who's had a career that's similar to Clayton Kershaw's. Yeah, Paul.
Mookie Betts is hitting 143 in the series.
Yeah.
Bellinger's hitting 188. Seager's carrying them.
Yeah.
Peterson's carrying them, too.
Yeah, McLovin.
It's not like the Braves had their ace on. They had some rookie that nobody even knew.
He was like 22 years of age.
Bryce Wilson.
But once again, these guys don't know better. That's why when you look at what the younger players in the bubble did in the NBA, it's because they didn't have to go into a foreign ballpark. They didn't have to face that, you know, home field advantage or home court advantage for the other team. I mean, they were just there, you know, nothing changed. You walked over, you played, and you weren't intimidated by anything. The Braves aren't in Los Angeles facing the Dodgers. They're in Texas. They don't know better. But, man, are they dangerous. All right, so that's the baseball playoffs here. Phone calls are welcome, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Albert Breer from the Monday Morning Quarterback was the first to report Le'Veon Bell going to the Kansas City Chiefs. I have an idea how they're going to use him. I don't know when they're going to use him, but I want Albert to talk about this decision because he could have gone to the Dolphins, maybe gotten more carries there, but they're going to probably platoon him. I think they're going to use him at the goal line because if there is a knock on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's not good at the goal line. And Le'Veon Bell can still catch the football. Yeah, Paul.
Did anyone think that Le'Veon Bell was going to go to the Dolphins over the Chiefs yesterday? Well, I mean, was that a goof?
No, because if you have a guy who's complained about his lack of use, he's going to go to a team where he's not going to get a lot of touches, where he could go to the Dolphins and probably get more touches. Yes, Eden?
But like the other way to say that is, oh, so wait, I could go to the Dolphins and work my ass off and lose? Okay, yeah, I'm in. Like, why would anybody do that? Or you could go be like the third man in on the Chiefs and get a ring?
Get to play in January.
Yeah. I'll do that all day.
Playoff checks.
Wait, so you guys would rather go and not sure how much you'd play with the Chiefs than actually be the starting running back for the Miami Dolphins?
Definitely. Because the money is essentially the same, right? Basically.
Yeah, you could incentivize it.
Right.
Who's the Dolphins starting running back, McLovin?
They have that kid who I don't know his name.
Wilson, probably.
There you go. That's Smith. All I need to know.
Smith.
Who's that guy that have that kid that like, oh, I don't even know. I don't want to go play for that team.
But they could see it. Miles Gaskin. Is that who? No, let's see. Wait, who's the guy? It's a name that we know, but we don't know. It's a new running back. But isn't Le'Veon Bell? He lives there, right? That's one thing. Like, I think he loves him some Miami, as I remember.
Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I'm a player, there is a little bit of, hey, I get to spend the winter in Miami.
Miles Gaskin. To go to KC.
Miles Blue a Gaskin. So it's the guy we know, but we don't know.
He's a big fantasy issue. Everyone's like, wait, is this guy for real? No. Are they going to get another running back? But don't you want to be in Miami? Miami could make the playoffs, by the way. We discount Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I know. It's about Kansas City, I think, more than Miami. The Kansas City, we think, well, there's going to be a playoff check. There could be a couple playoff checks. Could be a Super Bowl check. I understand that.
And winning is a lot of fun.
It is, but with the Jets, he didn't even get the ball. I wonder if he got the ball, he would have been okay with playing for the Jets, even though I want to play. Like, I want the ball. If I'm with Kansas City, I get chances there, but I still want to be able to play.
Yeah, he's still going to play. He's just going to play on a team that's actually good.
Yeah,
I mean, why would you want to go from the Jets, who are just atrocious, to the Dolphins that are like, you never know.
My next two or three games are against the Jets if I go to the Dolphins. I get to play great, I get the ball, Tua's going to be playing by the end of the year.
Oh, that'll be fun. You could get to spend the whole year with his learning curve. All right, awesome.
Nobody's complaining about the learning curve with Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow. Yes, McLovin.
Do you remember when Bell held out and every day he put up a viral video of him on South Beach hanging out at the beach? I think the South Beach factor is the only thing for the Dolphins. You're right. Football-wise, Chiefs by 1,000, but South Beach?
Yeah, I still want to carry the ball. I want the rock, man. Yes, Paulie.
By the way, I would live in Kansas City any day over Miami. I've been to both. It's not even close for me. Kansas City's fantastic. You ever been there? Good weather?
Yeah, I've been there.
Great food?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, yes, Tom.
It's just like, why aren't top free agents running to be in the big market of New York City? They have no interest in being on the crummy Knicks.
Thank you, Todd.
Welcome.
Miles Gaskin, the 234th pick out of Washington. In case you were wondering. All right, we'll take a break. Albert Breer on Le'Veon Bell deciding to go to Kansas City. Also, are the Colts playing this weekend? Because right now, it's kind of iffy. We'll talk to Albert Breer about that. Your phone calls are welcome as well. Tom Verducci, who was covering the Dodgers game last night, will join us coming up next hour. We'll take a break here. Just getting started. It's 20 after the hour. This is the Dan Patrick Show. Last week's in the books. Time to review the tape, prepare for this week. No better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. To add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs. And if you haven't tried DraftKings yet, go to the App Store now, download it for free, and all you have to do is sign up. And what are you waiting for? Get in the game. And you can do it right from your couch. You go to download the DraftKings daily fantasy app now. Use the promo code SQUAD. For a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. Don't miss out on week 6 action. Enter code SQUAD. Get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. Once again, the code is SQUAD only at DraftKings, where you can make it ring. Minimum $5 deposit is required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details, and your promo code is SQUAD. Good luck. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at FoxSportsRadio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. We will check in with one of my favorite NFL reporters, insiders, Albert Breer from the Monday Morning Quarterback on Le'Veon Bell. Is he a good fit in that Kansas City offense? This is what I was wondering, because we talked about Buffalo. We talked about Miami. I talked about Pittsburgh. It felt like there are a few teams that would be interested in Le'Veon Bell. The problem the Chiefs have, and they don't have many on offense, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has not been good in short yardage situations, not been good at the goal line. 9 carries in goal line situations, minus 1 yard, no touchdowns to show for it. And the Chiefs have 1 rushing touchdown from a running back this season. Now, maybe we're nitpicking a little bit there, but I do think that this is a concern, because there will be a game where that running attack is going to have to come up with some big yards or a big carry. And this is what Andy Reid, the luxury of having a great offense like this, and you can bring in Le'Veon Bell. It's a well-run team. They have success. And then you're saying to him, basically, we're going to pick your spots for you. And he's still a great receiver out of the backfield. This program brought to you by Mercedes-AMG. Do you suffer from lead foot? Do goosebumps appear for no reason? Stop living with uninspired performance. Visit mbusa.com/AMG. Find out if a Mercedes-AMG coupe, sedan, or SUV is right for you. Mercedes-AMG, driving performance. He's Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter and also a contributor to Monday Morning Quarterback. He joins us on the program. Why is Le'Veon Bell a great fit for Kansas City?
Well, you mentioned the short yardage thing. I think that's certainly a factor, Dan, that Damian Williams, who had served in that role for the Chiefs, opted out. So that left a hole in the roster. I think the other thing is they still love Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Part of the thing with him, though, you look at his history, he really only was a bell cow for 1 year at LSU. Like all rookies, he's never played a season as long as he's going to play this year. And they've been relying on him pretty heavily over the first month of the season. So this allows them to move Clyde Edwards-Helaire to maybe a little bit more of a situational role now, which potentially could mean you get more out of him in December and January and February. The other thing that I'd mention, quietly, their offensive line's been a little bit of an issue. And if you look back when they struggled against the 49ers early in the Super Bowl, when they struggled early against the Chargers in week 2, when they struggled against the Patriots, and then when they lost last week, in all of those games, you see at the line of scrimmage, they're having some issues. And so one way to mitigate some of those issues is to add a great running back who can, churn out tough yards, can help you in pass protection. And Le'Veon Bell brings all of those things. So the hope is you get a motivated player here, helps you preserve Clyde Edwards-Helaire a little bit, and maybe helps you mitigate what's been a little bit of an issue on the offensive line.
Why is there a mystery around the Indianapolis Colts and their game this weekend?
I don't think it's much of a mystery, Dan. I mean, I think this is all sort of a result of what happened with the Titans and the Patriots over the last few weeks. And this is sort of where we are, and I think where we're going to be for the rest of the season, where when any team has multiple positive tests over the course of a few days, they're going to shut down the facility in the short term. I don't think it would have happened 3 or 4 weeks ago this way. But, you know, based on what happened on Tennessee, I think this is sort of the way that everybody is going to move forward now. And it's sort of interesting, too. You know, you look at it and, you know, a lot of people have, and rightfully, have said, like, these teams should be acting with the most caution they possibly can and not trying to bowl through this. Well, now that they are, you're hit. It's hard for like me to turn around and say, okay, like now we'll hit the panic button. Like this is what you asked for. You wanted them to be more cautious. I think they should be more cautious. Now they are being cautious. And every time one of these comes up, people want to hit the panic button. I just think they're acting out of caution. And in all likelihood, it'll be a situation like the Falcons had earlier this week where they had two positive tests. They shut down for a day and they're back in the building this morning.
What's Odell Beckham Jr.'s mysterious illness?
I think it's a normal illness. And, you know, and that's another thing, Dan, that we're going to be dealing with, you know, because the testing isn't perfect. And I think there have been cases, not just in football, but nationwide, you know, where people come down with it and they consistently test negative. This is going to be tricky for the NFL because every time somebody comes down with a stomach bug, with the flu, with a cold, you almost have to treat it like it's COVID, even if the guy is testing negative. And you know, you've been around the league for a long time, Dan. I mean, the stuff that guys fight through in November and December on an annual basis, the things that teams do to manage the flu in their locker room so guys can play. You know, it's like the amount of guys that are doing that every single year, the public doesn't know this, but it's huge, you know? And so this could add a very real and different dynamic to the rest of the season where, you know, guys just come down with normal sicknesses that you would get any November or December. And now you got to shelve them for a week or two because you're worried that it could be COVID, even if the guy is testing negative.
Stephon Gilmore, Cam Newton, good to go.
Yeah, they're a go. And, you know, that's another interesting one because they, you know, obviously, I think it's a story because those are two very huge names and the Patriots had a total of four tests over that period. But, yeah, I mean, I think we saw the system at work, you know, over the last few days where I don't think Cam would have played against the Broncos had the game been held last weekend. And now, you know, that game gets delayed and we have sort of this inequity. Now, the other side of it, the interesting part about it is, you know, it also bought the Broncos time to get Drew Lock healthy and he had a shoulder injury. And so, you know, where, you know, 6 days ago we would have had, I think, Rippon versus Hoyer or Rippon versus Stidham. Now we're getting Newton versus Lock, which is another kind of interesting quirk to the way all of this works.
You look at some teams, obviously we have it top heavy. There's some really good teams, but we have a whole lot. There's an abundance of bad teams right now.
Yep.
And we know that prize at the end of the season could be Trevor Lawrence here. At what point does a team say it is smarter for us, like the Jets, or, I mean, you know, the Giants, maybe to a lesser degree, but at what point do you think these teams start to strategize of this is what's best for us, bigger picture, long term, particularly if you're the Jets right now?
Yeah, I think our point of reference, Dan, is probably 2011, you know, because I mean, look, like I've talked to scouts over the last 2 years about Trevor Lawrence and, you know, the consensus I'd say across the board is this is a once in a decade type of prospect, you know, and if you want to look over the last 40 years, John Elway, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence, like I think he's that good a prospect. And so if you remember at the end of the 2011 season, there were some questions about how the Colts were managing their roster. And there was all kinds of buzz how other teams were going to handle it. The Rams were one of those you might remember. And so I don't think it happens yet, but I think once we get to around Thanksgiving, it starts to crystallize what teams are actually in the running for that first overall pick. Maybe we start to see some stuff. As of right now, you know, the thing that prevents it from happening now is most bad teams have people in positions of power that are fighting for their jobs. So their mentality is, I need to save my job. I'm not worried about what's happening in 2021. But as we get later in the year, I certainly think that could become a factor.
Well, you got the trade deadline coming up in a couple of weeks. Can you see the Jets trade Sam Darnold, and would there be a taker? Could the Falcons trade Matt Ryan? Would there be a taker? Would the Lions trade Matthew Stafford, would there be a taker?
I don't think so. My guess is you wouldn't see one of the quarterbacks traded. Let's start with the Jets and Darnold. I you know, you'd be gambling big time that you wind up with the number one overall pick. And I think that the Jets trading Darnold would have to be tied to having the number one overall pick. So my guess is like Sam Darnold probably winds up on the roster the rest of the year. And whatever they do with Sam Darnold depends on kind of rides on where they're picking in April. And so, you know, I think Sam Darnold would have a ton of value out there. I think baseline, what Josh Rosen brought home for the Cardinals a couple of years ago, which was a 2 and a 5. But I do think it could wind up being as much as a late one. Like, say you're Pittsburgh, for example. An executive brought this up to me the other day. Do you flip the 25th pick in the draft for Sam Darnold, and now you have your potential replacement for Ben Roethlisberger? To me, that makes a lot of sense, because the Steelers may never be picking high enough to get a Trevor Lawrence or a Trey Lance or a Justin Fields. So I think Sam Darnold will have some value. You know, with Matt Ryan, I think the Falcons would need to be blown away. I know Arthur Blank and Rich McKay would like to leave that up to whoever the next coach and GM are. And then in Detroit, I think this is, you know, again, sort of a situation where everybody there is fighting for their job. So unless the plug gets pulled on Bob Quinn or Matt Patricia, I think they're counting on Matt Stafford to help them turn it around and convince the Ford family to keep him in 2021.
A couple of things I was told prior to the draft. That the Colts were really interested in Jordan Love. And then the Packers went up and got him because they knew that that was going to be the heir apparent to Phillip Rivers. And then with the Lions, that they were really kicking the tires on Tua. And I don't know if you heard that, but that was from, you know, a source of mine who I trust. But like, that explains a little bit about Green Bay worried that maybe Indianapolis was going to swoop in and take him. And then would Tua go to Detroit? And I was told that that staff in Detroit was saying, look, if we don't make this work this year, we're not going to have these jobs. And therefore, they didn't want to go in on Tua and then maybe try to do something with Stafford. Does that sound right?
Yeah, and I can tell you, Dan, I can add to that. You know, Detroit's really kicked the tires on quarterbacks for the last 2 years. In fact, if you guys remember, Dave Gettleman saying there were two teams he was worried about when he drafted Daniel Jones 6th instead of 17th overall. One of those teams, I think it was out there, was Washington. Jay Gruden really liked Daniel Jones. I was told the other team was Detroit, that the Giants had information that Detroit was really interested in Daniel Jones as well. And so it's not that they don't like Stafford. I think they really they love Matthew Stafford personally and as a player. The injuries have sort of piled up. And so that's caused them to at least take a hard look at quarterbacks, not just last year, but over the last 2 years. And what was the other one you mentioned there?
I mentioned Jordan Love to the Colts.
Jordan Love. I think the Colts, so the way the Colts view Phillip Rivers right now, he's buying them time. Chris Ballard was in Kansas City with John Dorsey, right? And Andy Reid. And they had Alex Smith on the roster. And what Alex Smith allowed them to do was it bought them time to find the long-term answer. And then when they saw somebody they really liked, they got very aggressive and went up and got him. And so the Colts are in that sort of – they've sort of created that window for themselves where, all right, like, we got Phillip Rivers for right now. Hopefully this buys us a little time to find the right guy. I would not be surprised at all, Dan, if the Colts are ultra-aggressive and trying to move up to go and get one of the top three. It probably won't be Lawrence, but maybe a Fields or a Lance when we get to April.
Yeah, and I still go back to, you know, I was told that the Saints were going to take Patrick Mahomes if he was there. Yeah. Like, isn't that amazing?
They were picking 11th that year. That was who Brett Veach, like, Brett Veach had strong information that the Saints really, really loved him and were planning to take him 11. So that was sort of the pressure point that the Chiefs had to leap over the Saints, and they wound up with the 10th pick. That was where they needed to go to get Mahomes. And I can tell you, there are two quarterbacks that Sean Payton has stood on the table for in New Orleans over the last 5 years or so. One was Patrick Mahomes. The other one he really loved was Baker Mayfield.
But, you know, Patrick Mahomes would be third string because he'd be behind Taysom Hill on the depth chart in New Orleans, though, right?
And maybe fighting with Jameis for a roster spot, right?
Are you a Taysom Hillist?
Based on my eyes, no. Based on what my eyes are telling me is there's not we just haven't seen enough. Like, I just haven't seen enough.
He's 30 years of age, Albert. It's not like, you know, this is.
And I know. And that's the thing. That's the thing I keep coming back to is, like, shouldn't we be seeing more now? But then based on my ears and you hear the way people in New Orleans talk about him. And I mean, it's one of those things where it's like you watch him and it's like, God, they're like, I don't know. Like, anytime, like, they're in a position where he has to throw the ball, it's a complete crapshoot, right? But then you look at the guy who's calling the shots here, and it's Sean Payton.
Yeah.
Who knows more about quarterbacks than Sean Payton? Who's been better at coaching and developing quarterbacks over the last, you know, 15 years in the NFL than Sean Payton? And so I'd always, you know, defer to what Sean Payton thinks. And it's not just what I'm hearing. They gave him a lot of money, you know? And so, like, I look at it and it's like, no, I'm not seeing it. I'm with everybody else on that, but shouldn't we trust Sean Payton on this? I feel like he's earned the benefit of the doubt when it comes to that position.
Yeah, no. I feel like Jameis Winston is more the future at that position than Taysom Hill.
It could be. And hey, look, like, you know, I thought it was a great move by Jameis to go there. Like, yeah. Honestly, to go rehabilitate your reputation, go to a place where you're going to get to learn. Both those guys, Taysom Hill, and somebody down there mentioned this to me, you know, a couple weeks ago, how, you know, Taysom and Jameis, like, imagine the graduate level quarterbacking school that those guys are in, getting to watch Drew Brees work on a day-to-day basis. I mean, that's phenomenal for both those guys, you know? So I think Jameis, you know, if there is something there, I think Jameis went to the place that's going to find it. You know, Sean Payton, you know, getting to work with Drew Brees, like, you'd have to think, like, the different factors in play in New Orleans would smoke out whatever sort of player Jameis Winston can be over the next, you know, over the course of the 2020 season.
Always great to talk to you, Albert. We appreciate the time, and have a great weekend. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan.
That's Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter and, of course, contributor to the MMQB. Our play of the day is up next here on The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, my God.
The play, the play of the day.
Runner left side, got it!
Check this out.
Pitch on the way. And Correa hits it in the air. Pretty deep to center. Sends back Kiermaier at the wall. See you later and see you tomorrow. The Houston Astros win it in the bottom of the ninth on Correa's walk-off homer, 4-3. And there will be a game six.
That's a great moment. And Carlos Correa called it. Told Dusty Baker I'm going to have a walk-off. Todd, you're not allowed to talk about the Astros. They did well.
I was talking more about the broadcast. It looked like he totally misjudged that had any chance of going out, if you heard the beginning of that call. There's a fly ball to center.
I don't know if it sounded exactly like that.
I like the calls where it's like, wait, Benish, there's a drive. But from the beginning, it sounded like, there's a fly ball to center. Oh, my God, I'm misjudging. This may be all wrong.
No, but that's what happens when you do play-by-play. You like to build up to it. It's rare when you just say, that's gone. Like, you go, and there's a drive. It's
fly ball to center field. That should be in. Oh, my God. This game is over. We'll see you tomorrow night. I may have stolen that from someone.
Will be a game six. Yes.
It's funny, too, how many times play-by-play guys go, I mean, are you kidding me? That, like, every play that happens, it'll be, you know, a home run or whatever it is. I mean, are you kidding me?
Well, they'll blame it on the wind for misjudging the call. There's a fly ball. Oh, wow, the wind must have really pulled that out there. To me, that looked like a pop-up to short.
Crushing it, Tyler.
Can we play that again? Do we have the sound?
Oh, my God.
The play. The play is called play of the day.
Runner left side, got it!
I'm going to play it and play it.
This is the play of the day.
Check this out.
Pitch on the way. And Correa hits it in the air. Pretty deep to center. Sends back Kiermaier at the wall. See you later and see you tomorrow. The Houston Astros win it in the bottom of the ninth.
It was not as slow as you're kind of pointing out.
It reeked of having no clue that there was any chance of that being a game-winning home run.
I like Todd's version better.
Yeah.
And the fly ball is trying to feel. That should wrap up. That's a walk-off. He told Dusty he would do it, and he did it.
Houston became the first team in postseason history to hit both a leadoff home run and a walk-off home run. George Springer and Carlos Correa, game six tonight, first pitch at 6 Eastern. That's courtesy of Fox Sports Radio, KBME, the Astros radio.
Yeah. Popped up to short, and I think he's going to wave off the center.
What?
Game six tomorrow night. Rays, you're not winning the AL pennant tonight.
Play of the day brought to you by Traeger. We have the Traeger fired up today, and the menu is beer bread, beer braised chicken tacos, and short rib chili. Alan, our IT guy slash chef slash cook, has done an unbelievable job again on this Traeger Meat Friday. Check out your grill, TraegerGrills.com/DP Show today. A couple of phone calls in here. Oh, Al in Atlanta. Oh, Albert in Atlanta. Hey, Al.
Hey, Danny.
How are you?
No, I'm great. You know I am, because it's nothing but positivity, and it was a nice night last night. Only as happy as the last night's starter. Now, got a bone to pick with Pauly.
Oh.
Don't ever put Bobby Cox in the same sentence with that bum who manages the Dodgers. Bobby took the Braves in 91 from worst to first and kept them there for 15 years. Roberts has never done any of that. Two. I agree with him, though. Kansas City, great town. Born there. Love it. Great barbecue.
All right. Great barbecue. Thank you, Al. Have a great weekend there. Bobby Cox. Don't mess with Bobby Cox.
I would never insult Bobby Cox.
No. You did, I think.
I think I was comparing his long run of success.
But not winning a World Series.
Well, I think Dave Roberts is right at the point that Bobby Cox was when he won his first title.
So you are comparing them?
Yeah, actually, quite a bit.
Okay. Phil in Indiana. Phil? Hey, Phil.
Dan, always a pleasure. Hey, real quick, I wanted to get your thoughts with Kershaw. So, Dan, in today's environment where we judge athletes by how they perform when the lights are shining brightest and how many rings and so forth,
yep.
Do you think that should be a criteria for the Hall of Fame? I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I do think it elevates certain players, pitchers. We don't hold other players accountable. At no other position in baseball do you go, yeah, but Barry Bonds or Don Mattingly, or throw in any Rod Carew. Yeah, but what do they do in the postseason? How many World Series titles? Pitchers, we do, because we've seen when it gets to the World Series, a pitcher can dominate. He can take over. He can win a game for you, where I can pitch around a player if I want to. You know, the pitcher itself. The reason why Curt Schilling is a borderline Hall of Famer, I think he's a Hall of Famer, but it's about his postseason. John Smoltz going into the Hall of Fame, that was based in part what he did in the postseason. There's certain pitchers that you single out because they were wonderful in the postseason. And yes, Kershaw's the first ballot Hall of Famer. So it's not going to affect him. But if he didn't have the stats that he had, then if he was a borderline Hall of Famer, he probably wouldn't get in because people would use the postseason against him. All right, Nick Saban is bound and determined to somehow coach this weekend. We'll hear from Coach Saban. I don't know how he's getting in the building, but he wants to know, can I get in the building? Why can't I coach? Can he be in a suite by himself? How many tests can he take before Saturday night where they would clear him? I'm curious about that. But it sounds like Coach is really hell-bent on trying to get into that stadium somehow, some way. Phone number 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. We'll talk to Tom Verducci. He was there on the field with the Dodgers game last night with the Braves. I know we have the benefit of hindsight, but I thought Kershaw was a five innings and done. And I know that the Braves had a couple of hits and then they blew it wide open. I just thought if you got five, that was great, because then I might be able to use Kershaw again in relief at some point. And that's why, and I think he was around 80 pitches. So he was where I thought, okay, I gotten everything I can get out of him right now. And let's just hope that my next two starters can get us to a seventh game. But we'll talk to Verducci about that. Did we settle on a poll question, McLovin?
We did. I put up that question. If you hate the Astros, when do you want to see them lose? I'll give you the results after the break.
Look at you. Look at you, teasing radio host. 1 hour in the books, two more to go.